Welcome, everyone, to episode 375 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we have an absolute metric S-ton to discuss today. The Milwaukee Bucks have gone all in, acquiring Drew Holiday and Bogdan Bogdanovic. The Chris Paul is officially going to the Phoenix Suns, and the Houston Rockets appear headed for a massive implosion, so we will hit all of that. Before we get into any of that, a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we are also live on Locker Room right now. So if you are on iOS, please download the Locker Room app. You can join us for live episodes. As a spoiler, we have two more coming this week, at least two more coming this week after the draft and right at the start of free agency. So come hang out on Locker Room. We'll have a lot of fun.
And when you say at the start of free agency, we mean right at the start of free agency.
Yeah, 6 p.m. Friday, we will be live. So with all that said, joining me today is a guy who is also not going to sleep very much this week. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
I don't know that word, Brian. Sleep? Can you use it in a sentence, please?
I was going to be a responsible adult last night and go to bed at a reasonable hour. And then, you know, it was 11 p.m.-ish Eastern time when news of the Drew Holiday trade broke. And I was like, nope, there goes that. And then, you know, I finally, by 12:30, I'm like settling down. I've seen, you know, I've started to process all of this. Right. And then the Bogdan Bogdanovic trade breaks. And I'm just like, all right, this is just how this week is going to go. We're sleeping for 4 hours a night. It's going to be great.
I feel so bad for you because it wasn't anything. It's like 6:30 a.m. from my time, right? I feel so bad for you, poor little sweetie. Are you okay? Know. Did you get your hours in? Because I sure as hell didn't.
I did not, but I will live through it. I'm gonna hibernate on Sunday after all this is over. Yeah. There are too many trades to discuss. The NBA draft is tomorrow, and we don't have time to discuss it. But we did do a draft preview with Jonathan Wasserman of Bleacher Report a few episodes ago. So if you are in the mood for pre-draft coverage, if you didn't read Sam Vecenie's 100,000-word Bible of draft coverage and you want Wass's takes, check out that episode. It's in our feed. And then Mort is covering the draft live, doing a live blog for Forbes tomorrow. So if you want to follow along with him, please check that out as well.
Indeed I am. It's going to be great.
So, Mort, let's dive right in here. The Milwaukee Bucks are all in. They traded basically their entire draft haul along with Eric Bledsoe and George Hill to the New Orleans Pelicans for Drew Holiday. The pick details, which I believe just came out this morning from Bobby Marks of ESPN, they gave up number 24 this year, which is Indiana's pick that was owed to them, a 2024 pick swap, a 2025 unprotected first, a 2026 pick swap, and a 2027 unprotected first. So I think it is safe to say this is a grand slam home run for New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
That's just an incredible amount of draft capital. And to push it that far, I mean, the Bucks owe a 2022 pick to Cleveland already, so they were restricted in which picks they could send out. But I think that actually worked out well in the Pelicans' favor because, you know, pushing them that far down the line, A, you're betting on, well, what happens if the Bucks implode? But B, I mean, this is going to be, you know, a lot of those picks are coming when Zion is on his second contract and when that's when, you know, stars tend to get a little bit antsy and start to eye greener pastures. So having that much extra draft capital in those years should help the Bucks or the Pelicans maintain a good young core moving forward. But I mean, more from the Bucks' perspective, what did you think of this deal?
I think it was a necessary deal, and I'll venture this guess: I don't think they relinquish that type of. I don't think they sacrifice their entire future draft capital and two players if they didn't have some sort of inclination that Giannis was staying, especially because Drew is an expiring contract.
Yeah.
Which makes it even more wild. I mean, I would not have anticipated this was his value at this point, but this was I don't necessarily think it does represent his value in a vacuum. I think this represents his value in relation to Giannis Antetokounmpo. And I think that's the most important thing to take away from this. But I like it from the Bucks from an on-court perspective. In terms of asset management, not so much. But I get it. Like, I get what they're trying to accomplish. I get that they want to really convince Giannis that they're in it to win it, and they're serious about upgrading it. So I get it. But no, I mean, on-court-wise, absolutely. Look, Eric Bledsoe was just not consistent enough. He's not a reliable player, at least not in the playoffs. He can just sort of become invisible all of a sudden. He's so inconsistent. And here comes Drew Holiday, who is, at the very least, defensively consistent every single night. Like, he's a legit 6'4 guard who can guard multiple positions. He's a wonderful passer. He works really well off the ball as well as a scorer. Not necessarily is a strong three-point shooter, but he can just still work off the ball, grab it and go. And I think with Giannis occupying that many possessions, having a guy who can do that is really a luxury. And, well, it might actually be even a necessity in the playoffs. So I love it. I think the Bucks are definitely significantly stronger on the court right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think your point about, you know, his value relative to what they got in return, it's like what OKC did with Paul George and the Clippers last year, where it was, from the Clippers' perspective, it's not we're trading that many picks for Paul George. We're effectively thinking of it as we're trading that many picks for Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. From the Bucks' perspective now, I think you're totally right. I mean, they don't make this move, I hope. I mean, good God. it could be like a Knicks thing where they trade Kristaps because they think they're getting Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and then they end up with, like, Julius Randle and Bobby Portis. But hopefully the Bucks are a little smarter than the Knicks, because, yes, I think they go to Giannis and say, hey, we're willing to get Drew Holiday, but we are giving up, you know, basically our next half-decade worth of picks. Like, these picks are going to be very good. I mean, the 2025 and 2027 are completely unprotected. So if you leave, those could be very good picks. We are risking a ton here. You better, like, commit to us right now. And I think based on the rumblings from Mark Stein and Brian Windhorst, it does seem like he is leaning that way.
Right.
So I think it's a gamble for the Bucks. I think it's a gamble you have to take. Like, I think you really did run the risk of seeing him. Like, I don't think he wants to leave. I think, you know, in his heart of hearts, he would like to stay in Milwaukee, but I think seeing what happened in the playoffs this year had to shake them, where they're just like, okay, we got one more year and we're going backward relative to title contention. I mean, we've been the number one seed. We've been so dominant in the regular season. We've just gotten thumped in the playoffs for two straight years now. Like, if this happens again, there's a real chance he leaves. Well, you know, upgrading this starting five, like, now theoretically, I mean, assuming Mike Budenholzer actually plays his best players in the playoffs, which is no guarantee, but, you know, they could have a five-man lineup of Drew Holiday, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Chris Middleton, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Brooke Lopez. Like, that team deserves to be the absolute title favorite right now.
So, you know, let's get back to Bogdan, because I have thoughts there. But before we do, I just have a question. So what year is it that basically OKC and New Orleans occupy the entire NBA draft?
Isn't it every year from 2023 onward, basically?
It feels like it. But, you know, just to take on a short detour here, it's interesting, you know, the haul for these secondary guys now. Because you're right. We saw it with Paul George. We're now seeing it with Drew Holiday. Because there's just so much pressure on organizations to maintain their current superstar or to acquire them in the case of Kawhi Leonard, that now you're just paying these insane fees of, like, multiple draft picks and whatnot. So I think teams that now have a guy who isn't necessarily number one, but is like a number two guy or a number three guy who could be available in a trade, you know, they could ask for so much, Brian. Like, could you imagine? I was having this discussion with someone earlier today. Could you imagine if a superstar out there identified like Zach LaVine as his future running mate, the Bulls, because of the contract he's on, could ask for virtually everything. It completely changes the fabric of how we look at rosters now, I think.
Yeah. No, I think you're totally... Like, what is... I mean, I was going to make this point later, and we'll get back to, you know, James Harden, but even, like, a Bradley Beal right now. What is Washington sitting there thinking, like, okay, we know we're going to eventually trade Bradley Beal. Right. Seeing Drew Holiday command three picks and two pick swaps, Washington should absolutely hold out for a package like that, and you just have to wait for the next team that has a disgruntled superstar or is at risk of losing that star. And, you know, I don't know who that is going to be quite yet. You right. can make some educated guesses, but, you know, in a couple of years, like, maybe it's Devin Booker, maybe it's Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, who knows? But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a risk. Like, this is not a slam dunk for the Bucks. I think, you know, it's something they had to do, and if it gets Giannis to sign, you know, they're going to be in the conversation for title contenders as long as Drew stays there. We haven't seen details on what Bogdanovich's contract is going to be, how long it's going to be, but I mean, this does have some major backfire potential, you know, toward the middle half of next decade. But, you know, for the next 2 or 3 years, you take that risk if it means you're going to keep Giannis. So,
right.
On the Bogdanovich note, yeah, they're trading Dante DiVincenzo, Ersan Ilyasova, and DJ Wilson to the Kings for Bogdanovich, which means, I mean, the Bucks bench is completely depleted now.
Yeah.
Like, they've got to sign, I mean, because they're also going to be hard-capped after doing a sign-in trade for Bogdanovich, so they're going to be pretty limited in terms of what they could do to round out the rest of their roster. And I almost wonder if it's like that scene in Moneyball where, I don't know if you've seen it, but Billy Bean, the general manager, you know, is just trading away players to make the manager actually play the players he wants to play. I wonder if this is John Horst's strategy. Like, Mike Budenholzer, I swear to God, you can't play 10 players in the playoffs because I'm trading away everyone, and you're going to have 5 good players and a bunch of scrubs. Play them 40 minutes a night, or you are going to lose, and you're going to look even dumber than you did last time.
Yeah, yeah, that's actually one of my favorite movies. So I
okay.
Yeah. I know nothing of baseball, but I do know that if you're a rookie and you're about to make it to the All-Star game, you're probably pretty good. And yeah. At least in that movie, he was like, "Nope, I don't want that. I want someone else on first." I can totally relate to that for the Bucks, because you're right. I mean, what Bud did in the playoffs. See, this is a weird. I want to see last season, but it's still technically this season. This is still right. screwing with me. That was pretty damning. Like, yeah. Even though I absolutely love what they did here in terms of roster construction, I'm really scared for him. I mean, what happens if Bud just completely messes up again? Like, then what?
Yeah, because I mean, Drew Holiday has a player option next season,
right?
Like, he is under guaranteed contract for one more year. Now, I don't think he's going to leave, and I would guess, much like we're assuming the Bucks had some extension conversations with Giannis, I'm guessing they also did with Drew. It wouldn't surprise me if he ends up signing, you know, adding a couple years to his deal or guaranteeing that he'll pick up his option next season, whatever right. the case may be. Because, like, why would you leave that roster? But, you know, if there is some implosion potential, and if this goes wrong and if Drew leaves, yeah, I mean, it's a high risk, high reward swing for the Bucks is how I would swing, you know, term yeah. it. And for the Pelicans, it's like, there's no risk here. This is just all reward.
Yeah. And thankfully, I will say this from the Bucks, they're not going to miss out on my son, because he won't be draft eligible about until 2031, I think. So the 2027 pick is not really a problem. Like, it's
good.
It's going to be before his arrival. So if they bought him out, they still have a chance.
Yeah, that's good. Justin Fried in our chat right now is asking what we think of the Bogdanovich trade from the Kings' perspective. What's your take, Mort?
So are we even allowed to talk about it?
are side of trades suddenly allowed? I wasn't under the impression that was kosher until Friday, but apparently
yeah.
it is.
Yeah, that honestly, that's the one thought I had, that, like, since that came out, like, what is what is happening here? They were not allowed to do that.
No.
So, I mean, they get Dante, which I really like Dante. And I think Boogie was on his way out anyway, right? It didn't seem like that was a long-term fit. It didn't seem like that was there was any interest from his side in a long-term commitment with Sacramento. So I think, you know, getting him out is one thing, but having a return like that was completely fair. I think value-wise, it's okay considering the optics. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, the Kings had been telegraphing that they did plan to match any offer sheet Bogdanovich signed.
Right.
But that, you know, I think every team does that as a negotiating tactic to kind of deter teams from throwing out big offer sheets, because then your cap space is going to be tied up for a couple days while the Kings decide whether to match.
Right.
And, you know, going back to this past season or pre-COVID season, Buddy Hield ended up losing his starting spot to Bogdanovich and was very unhappy about it. So it was pretty clear that this offseason they had to choose between one or the other. Now, I think given the rumblings that have been coming out about Buddy Hield, you know, being frustrated with Luke Walton not returning his phone calls, it seemed like the obvious move would be to trade Buddy Hield and re-sign Bogdanovich. But, you know, again, we don't know what he's going to end up signing for. I'm guessing those details won't come out till Friday, but maybe he's going to sign for a price point that the Kings weren't comfortable matching. And maybe they decided they do want to just go back, put Buddy Hield back in the starting lineup. DiVincenzo's a good depth piece. DJ Wilson's a flyer. Ersan's just salary matching, but he's a capable player. It's not like he's going to hurt them necessarily.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, I think if the alternative was Atlanta signing him and losing him for nothing, then at least you get something of value in return with DiVincenzo, and then, you know, see what happens with Wilson.
This is a step back though from them in the short term. And you know, with Hield out of the door as well, like what is he, 27 or 28? I don't remember, mm-hmm. but it's something somewhere up there. So the prime guys are basically going to be heading out the door. And I just wonder if this is going to be one of those things where they just kind of recommit to De'Aaron Fox and go, you're our centerpiece. This is what we're going to go now. We're going to focus on the future. We're going to go all in, hopefully, next year on Cade Cunningham. We're going to try to see if we can get, you know, a primary top superstar in here via the draft over the next couple of years, because like they had to do something. Like they weren't good enough to compete despite, you know, at least half the roster were in their primes. Their young guys were either injured or not good enough or at least not ready to contribute mightily. So I think for them this is just a matter of let's get younger, see what we can do from here. We're going to take like 3 years to figure it out, right? Doesn't it seem like that type of move?
Yeah, I mean, do you think Hield is still out the door in the wake of this move, or do you think that they might end up recommitting to him now that they don't really have a choice?
Let me answer you by asking you a question.
Okay.
Is Luke Walton still roaming the sidelines?
I don't know. I mean, so far, yes, mm-hmm. but I guess we'll see. You know, they still have a month to change.
Yeah, I think he's fed up. I think Hield is definitely ready to move on. I mean, we've talked on this podcast a lot about Sacramento, in particular the ownership issue as well. It's not always mm-hmm. functional. Justin, by the way, chimed in here. He said Bogey was Vlade's guy. Once he left, the writing was on the wall. I could definitely see mm-hmm. that, and I think that might be true with quite a few players, honestly. Hell, maybe the Kings would consider trading Bagley just to get the entire stigma of the whole Luka Doncic draft out of it. Like, we don't know. We have no idea. It seems like they are a franchise that keeps their cards close to their vest at this point with the new managerial team. But again, I have no idea where they're going. Like, we know where the Pistons are going. We know where the Hornets are going. Like, they're going into an active rebuild. They're trying to get young guys. We have really no inclination of knowing where the Kings are going, and that bothers me a little bit, because now we can look at the writing here on the wall and go, oh, okay, they got some of their prime guys out, now they're trying to go younger, but it's the Kings. They could turn around in free agency and sign someone who's 33.
Right. As they are wont to do.
Exactly. No. So it's a difficult thing to answer. By the way, Sean just said that Tim Botemps just tweeted, Wiz general manager said Beal is not going anywhere. I will venture a guess to say that is a strategic strategic statement, because Beal is, I know that there's a very, very strong relationship with him in the city of Washington, but he would want to win at some point. I wouldn't be surprised if he's another one of those dominoes that could fall this year or near the deadline, whenever that is. I don't think we have a set date on the trade deadline.
No, not yet. I actually don't think, I don't even think Beal's eligible to be traded right now, if memory serves correctly.
It's the start of the next season, 2020-2021, right?
Okay.
If memory serves.
Yeah, I don't remember offhand, okay. But all I know is, I mean, they've got him for at least two more years. So, you know, the whole time they have been saying, we want to see him with John Wall. We want to see him with Rui and with, you know, whoever we take at number nine or whatever they do. So, like, I think they're going to go into the season with him. And if John Wall is just a shell of himself and he starts to get really frustrated, trade deadline's a possibility, although I do wonder how this season in particular is going to impact in-season moves, right? Like, just with all of COVID and uncertainty, who knows? Would not shock me if they keep him throughout this season, and then next off-season, I was about to say next summer again, but we don't know, next off-season, when they pull the trigger.
This is going to be so difficult for us.
Well, I mean, part of me thinks, too, and I just wrote about this at Forbes from Miami, like, if these moves make Giannis sign the Supermax,
yeah,
that changes everything about the summer of 21. All of these teams that have been hoarding cap space are, you know, for a run at Giannis, Miami and Toronto in particular, suddenly have to pivot to a plan B. I think Victor Oladipo wants himself to be the plan B, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it would probably be going after Beal.
Right. Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Like, 30-point guy, 6 assists per game, you know, high-character guy. I get it.
Yeah. But just to close out Sacramento before we move on, I mean, I do wonder, you know, my instinct is that they would be willing to trade Hield, because I can't imagine you want to keep a malcontent in the locker room. But, like, I do wonder if this makes him a little more amenable to staying. I know, you know, Sixers Twitter has been infatuated with this guy for months and has been fixated on a Horford Hield trade, which I just still don't understand why the Kings would do it. But, right, you know, to me, seeing Bogdanović out the door makes me think that, especially that framework, is even less likely than it already was.
Yeah. Totally agree.
All right, so let's move on more. We aren't going to spend a ton of time on this next one, because our last episode, we spent a lot of time discussing it. Chris Paul did get traded to the Suns. The rumors came out late last week, I believe. He and Abdel Nader are going to the Suns for Ricky Rubio, Kelly Oubre, Ty Jerome, Jalen Leck, and a 2022 draft pick, the protections on which are protected 1 through 12 and 22, 1 through 10 and 23, 1 through 8 and 24, unprotected in 2025. So from Phoenix, let's start with Phoenix's perspective, because I know you were a bit hesitant. You know, the basic framework was going to be Rubio and Oubre just from salary matching purposes alone. Right. You were a bit hesitant to include Oubre in there if you were the Suns. So now, seeing the full terms of the deal, what do you think?
Yeah, this was a big call. Again, I get it. The Suns are practically desperate to make the playoffs, and this gets them closer. So I understand it. I just think that ultimately we are living in a world where wings are at a premium. They are just so influential in how the game is played, and especially guys who can play both forward spots and who has some on-ball skills. Kelly Oubre has that. So that's why I am reluctant to basically give him up in a trade for someone who will be 36 next year. That said, you know, Chris Paul brings a cultural impact. He brings on-court savvy. He brings an unselfish attitude in terms of on-court play. He'll make Devin Booker better. He'll make DeAndre Ayton better. He'll make Cameron Johnson better. So yes, I understand the idea of it. I understand what they're trying to accomplish, and it's, you know, that's well within their rights to do so. I probably would not have gone this deep, you know, paying wise, but I have to assume there were offers elsewhere that were comparable, and the Suns just decided, you know what, we've targeted him, we've done our research, this is the guy who we've identified as the one to basically move us forward and bring us into the playoffs. In that case, what can you do but basically say, okay, well, I hope you know what you're doing, and good luck to you.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it all depends on if they were not planning to re-sign Oubre in 2021, then it's a lot easier to swallow. Because, you know, we talked about this last episode. If they think Mikal Bridges is their future and they want it more of a stretch four to put between Bridges at the three and Ayton at the five, and they don't think Oubre is that type of player, they want someone more like Cameron Johnson, or...
Which is fair.
Insert free agent X. Then you can swallow these terms a bit easier. The fact they didn't give up Bridges or number 10, I think, is a win for them. My question for them is the timing. I know Bobby Marks and John Hollinger and Kevin Pelton all hit this yesterday when the deal went down, is they could have held off on making the trade official until after the new league year started. Mm-hmm. They would have had somewhere in the neighborhood of, I think, $17 million in cap space if they had renounced their rights to Dario and Aaron Baines. So they could have gone shopping for that power forward, whether it's Gallinari, Davis Bertans. You know, those were the two that we kind of settled on last episode.
Right.
They did not decide to do that. They made the trade now, so they're going to operate as an over-the-cap team. They still have their rights to Saric and Baines, and they still have the non-taxpayer mid-level exception. So they can still go free agent hunting. I don't think they're getting Gallo or Bertans at that price, though.
No.
So do you think they screwed up by doing the trade now? Or do you, I mean, you know, conversations, quote-unquote, can't happen until Friday. But, like, they probably have a pretty good idea of whether they were in the market for Gallo or Bertans. So,
Right. So it depends really on what you prefer, because, like you said, in order to get cap space, you would have to renounce Dario Saric, or at least to optimize your cap space. Mm-hmm. If they value him highly and they decide, you know, we're just not going to roll the dice with him, we want to retain him, then no, it wasn't a mistake. If they end up completely lowballing him and he signs elsewhere and they basically just went through a whole lot of trouble for nothing, then yeah, you could argue they probably should have done it in a different way. But ultimately, you know, I have to assume, this is an NBA organization after all, I have to assume that this is a discussion that they have had multiple times over. Like, do we function as an over-the-cap team, or do we go in and play around with cap space in a year where there are just not a lot of guys available? And maybe they just basically decided to go, you know, we still have the ability to re-sign Dario, who we can flip at a later date because he's still attractive to some teams. And the non-tax payer MLE might actually be good enough to get someone good because there aren't a lot of money available around the league. So I have seen, you know, that criticism. I don't really put that much stock into it. I think they know what they're doing. At least I hope so.
Right, yeah. I think they know... Maybe not where Gallo and Bertans are going, but I think they know at least if they had a legit shot at either one of those guys. And if they did, I think they probably would have held off on the trade. But the fact that they did not seems to suggest to me that neither one of those guys was a realistic option for them. Do you think Phoenix, we don't know who they're going to sign with the MLE or who they take at number 10, but as currently constructed with this core, do you think Phoenix is a legit playoff team next year?
It's the West. So saying a legit playoff team in the West is, you know, that's a stretch. Like, you would have to be in the top tier before I really feel comfortable. I mean, look, they have tremendous teams in the West. You know, it seemed like Portland, you know, tremendously talented, would be a top five seed in the East every single year. They could see themselves outside the playoffs picture next year. Now, actually, I don't believe that anymore because they got Robert Covington, which we'll get back to. But, like, it's so tough to say in the West, right? But, I mean, Chris Paul is still Chris Paul to some extent. He might be older, but, like, his presence definitely raises your floor, significantly so. He does present the best chance of them getting into that playoff picture and remaining there for the long haul in the regular season. And then when you close in over the final month, that's when he'll probably take off. Devin Booker is one year older, 1 year more experienced, and seems to be primed to really take over now and become that top 15, top 10 player. DeAndre Ayton is entering his third year. Cameron Johnson is second. I think there's a pretty good foundation for them to make the playoffs, but I can't sit here and go, yeah, absolutely. Like, I have no idea. It's the West.
Yeah. No, and I think that's fair because, you know, I think it's, we'll see what happens with OKC if they sign and trade Gallo elsewhere or something, but I think it's pretty safe to pencil them out of the playoffs next year.
Houston,
which
maybe
we'll get to shortly. Yeah. They're teetering on some major blow up potential, so they could fall out. But you know, the Warriors are lurking. I think they might not be a complete rock solid lock, but you got to figure they're more likely than not to get in. The Pelicans are probably going to jump up a bit. You know, Memphis is right there as well. Injuries will inevitably cause at least one or two teams that we expected to be playoff teams to fall down the standings or even fall out. But yeah, if Phoenix was in the East, I would feel pretty comfortable that they would be a playoff team.
Yes.
Unfortunately, they are in the West, so I can't be so sure of that.
No, it is definitely not. It's not the optimal situation you want to be in if you're a Phoenix, because you just sacrificed a lot of assets. You're getting a guy in. But at the same time, you're definitely heading towards a season where even if you play to the very best of your abilities, you might still just get locked out. I think what works for them is the 8-game winning streak in the bubble. I think that built them so much confidence going into this season, right? It does seem like they were hitting on all cylinders. Like, they played a very cohesive brand of basketball. They just looked primed and ready to flip the page and turn that narrative. So they would really have to lean on that, I think, going into this year and then basically saying, and now we're even better because we have Chris Paul running the show. So, I won't rule them out. That's what I'm saying. I definitely won't rule them out. They're right there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you probably, if you're the Suns, you look at what Chris Paul did with the Thunder last year, where they were expected, after trading Russ for Chris Paul, they were expected to be in the midst of a rebuild, and then suddenly they're the number five seed.
Yeah.
So, like, I think you could argue that this Phoenix roster is better than what the Thunder had last year. So, you know, I think, as you said, you know, there's a cultural element here. Like, Chris Paul is going to help set a tone of a winning organization
that
they haven't had in Phoenix for a long time. And having a veteran mentor like Chris Paul is going to do wonders for guys like Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, DeAndre Ayton. So I'm with you. It's, you know, they gave up a pretty big haul for a 35-year-old on a horrendous contract. But I think in this case, it might end up being worth it. What did you think of it from OKC side?
Obviously a big haul. I mean, you know, you're getting all these guys. You're getting Jalen Lecque. You're getting Kelly Oubre. Ty Roma has potential. And you're getting a protected 2022 pick, which until, you know, apparently there is some skepticism about when the NBA is going to allow high school players back in. It might actually get pushed to a later year instead of 2022. But that was the year we all expected that to be, you know, be activated, so to speak. And if you had a first round draft pick, protected or not, in 2022, like an additional pick, you would look pretty good, because those are two draft classes jumping on top of each other that same year. So that's right. that would have been an insanely valuable pick, which now might have lost a little bit of its luster. But you know what? You have 17 draft picks from tomorrow until 2026. I think you'll be fine.
Yeah.
But I am intrigued to see Jalen Lecque, though. Like, 43-inch vertical, speedy little guard. I wonder if there's a jump shot in there that is going to show itself like at some point. He's very young. And if there's a team out there that sometimes just gets the best of out of their young guards in particular, it's OKC, like Reggie Jackson, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Like, if we reinvented Chris Paul's, they didn't reinvent him, but they basically injected him with some energy. It's an organization where you do tend to see guards get better or flip the narrative of their careers, like Dennis Schroeder as well. So maybe these are tremendous assets going forward.
Yeah. Do you think, Rubio is clearly not part of their long-term future, but do you think they keep him, or are they going to try to flip him away, you think?
They'll try. I'm pretty certain they've already taken phone calls. Like, there would be teams out there who would be interested in Rubio right now just to have this veteran ball handler, play initiator, defender. Like, he's a legit 6'4", and he's just such a strong floor general. I know he's not a strong shooter, but he's not a liability in that department anymore. Even if he doesn't have a quick release, like, he's fine as a spot-up kind of guy. Like, it seemed like Chicago would probably be interested, I could imagine. Or just basically teams that might be young, but know, okay, well, the next couple of years, we're not really going to go anywhere anyway. So we might as well get a guy in at the point guard position who can just be a mentor, a teacher, like, show our young guys how to carry themselves, because Ricky Rubio does that. So I would be shocked if they aren't picking up the phone. But hell, they might want to retain him this year for the sake of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, because, like, everyone and their mother from OKC came out and basically just said, talked about the relationship between Chris Paul and SGA. So there's going to be like a vacuum there where Rubio could more or less come in and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to be that guy now. I'm going to be in your corner. Whenever you go, you're struggling on the court, come talk to me. We'll figure something out. I think there's value in having that type of player there.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. All right, well, let's get into the news that we don't have a definitive conclusion to yet, but rumblings have been bubbling up really over the last week, but they seem to hit a boil yesterday. James Harden seems to really want out of Houston. Both Woj and Shams have reported some variation of it. Woj is saying he is focused solely on forcing a trade to the Nets. Shams said he's focused on Brooklyn and Philly. So let's go at it from Brooklyn's side first. They have a ton of contracts that they could flip. It would be some combination of Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, Torian Prince, Jarrett Allen, draft picks, through 2075, whatever. What do you think of a potential Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden big three?
I think it's going to create a lot of headlines. I think people are going to talk about them a whole lot. They're going to be on SportsCenter a lot. And then when they're 42 and 40 season wraps, it's going to be like, oh, what happened? Despite everyone knowing what happened, it just didn't work. I'm kidding. They'll be significantly better than that. It's like James Harden and Kevin Durant, even if he's not 100%, like, they're going to carry things. I am basically just being negative because I don't believe in Kyrie Irving's ability to, absorb two other stars alongside him to that extent. Like, James occupies a lot of possessions. I don't think that is what Kyrie is going to envision what's best for him. So this has great, great potential for, scandals and headlines and weirdness. Like, the NBA is a weird league, and this would definitely have the most potential of just being the strangest single team season ever. So because of that, I'm for it. But in terms of the trade, look, we just saw what Drew Holiday went for. Are we going to sit here and pretend like the Houston Rockets would settle for anything less than that. Like that package, Spencer Dinwiddie, Jared Allen, Caris LeVert, that does nothing for me if I'm Houston and I'm seeing what a guy like Paul George went for last year, or what a guy like Drew Holiday went for this year, or even a guy like Russell Westbrook went for last year. You think I'm going to sit there and be like, hell, I'll take less for James Harden than what I gave up for Russell Westbrook a year ago? Like, no.
Right.
No, that's ridiculous. You just got two first-round draft picks out of Robert Covington. Like, no, that you're not. The Spencer Dinwiddie, Jared Allen, and Caris LeVert? Okay. Fine. That's the starting point. And then you add picks. A lot of picks.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they do have control of all of their picks, all of their first-round picks moving forward. So they do, they have 19 in this year's draft as well. So they do have the draft compensation to include. But yes, I think you're right. It would be, honestly, at least three firsts and three pick swaps, if not four firsts and three pick swaps. Yeah. And I wonder, I know the Bucks management is not the same as what was there in the early 2010s with the KG Paul Pierce deal, but I do wonder if they look back at that and they're a little gun shy about giving up, you know, five, six, seven unprotected picks and or pick swaps.
I think they should knowing, be.
Yeah, knowing what happened and knowing the potential for this to go up in flames as, you know, look, I mean, the three of those guys are incredibly talented offensive basketball players. Like, they would have three of the best isolation scorers in the game. So the upside is there, but there's also tremendous downside. So I would not blame the Nets from getting cold feet if the Rockets were demanding, you know, all of those players plus a ton of picks and pick swaps as well.
Yep. You know, it's not going to work to a championship level, I think. Like, yeah, they're probably going to win 50-55 games if they get it, but I don't trust that combination. I just don't.
Right. Right. Like, does that team beat, what you know, the new look Bucks?
See, are we taking into account the Mike Budenholzer factor here?
We have to.
Right.
Until,
in that case, until I don't know. I really don't know, but do they beat Boston with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown a year older? I don't think so. And I realize that's coming off really harsh. But look, I have no faith in Kyrie Irving whatsoever. I just don't. I think he's a fake superstar. I've said that repeatedly. KD, I just hope he returns to form, because look, a 60% KD would just be awful. I would hate that. But unfortunately, it's in the cards, and I apologies to KD for saying that, because she actually owns this app that we're recording on right now, or part owner. But yeah, sorry, you can come in to this room, and we'll gladly pick up your call. And then Harden is used to being the number one guy. Like, it's been his team in Houston since, I want to say, 2012, right? 2012,
yeah, you got 2012. There?
That's 8 years. So now he would have to sacrifice touches to not just one, but two players. This is one of those situations where everyone would have to be on the same line of thought here. This would have to be Boston in 2008, where you get Ray Allen in there, you get Kevin Garnett in there, and those guys have a conversation. Those three, you know, Paul Pierce is already there. Those three guys, they sit down, and they look each other in the eye and they go, no ego whatsoever this year. Like, none. Every ounce of ego is put at the door. We don't care about individual stats. We don't care about individual accomplishments. It doesn't matter if we finish with 5 points each, as long as we get the W. Like, that's the that's the determination that we need to have. The whole Ubuntu factor. That is what the Brooklyn Nets would need for that trio to work. And honestly, I think that's a non-starter. Could you imagine Kyrie Irving taking on any sort of Ubuntu mentality? Because I sure as hell can't. And I don't think I don't think James Harden can either.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a non-starter just because of seeing how their NBA careers have progressed. I mean, how many co-stars has James Harden run out of town between Dwight Howard, Chris Paul, and now Russell Westbrook, there just seems to be some discord in terms of, you know, can he operate along one ball dominant superstar, let alone two? Kyrie with LeBron in Cleveland famously butted heads, and, you know, he said he learned his lesson when he was in Boston, but then repeatedly threw his teammates under the bus in Boston, and even this year in Brooklyn, when he shot like 5 of 20 against Philly and then came out afterwards like, we need more help. Yeah. It's like, you need to stop taking a bunch of bad shots. That's step one.
Yeah.
KD, I think, at least had the experience with Golden State, but that was always kind of an uneasy marriage for those 3 years. It was, this is Steph and Clay's team, and I'm just kind of this mercenary, and my rings aren't like earned, and that people are calling me a snake on Twitter, all that stuff.
No, but that was always unfair. I'm sorry to interrupt, but that was always unfair. I think he did an absolutely remarkable job. And again, I'm not just saying that because he's part owner of the app, but I think he did an absolutely enormous job at actually getting into a team that was so established and creating his own place there. Like, you know, he could have moved off on the ball so much more if he wanted to, but he didn't. Like, he was completely fine moving more off the rock, like letting, you know, Steph and Clay cook, like letting Draymond get his touches as well as a playmaker. I know those two butted heads once in a while, but that's, look, I'm putting that at the feet of Draymond, because Draymond is just, you know, his mentality is, it can be off-putting to a lot of players. I wouldn't put the blame on KD for that. I just wouldn't. What he did those 3 years is nothing short of amazing. Coming into that environment, so many players would have feared that, and he took it as a challenge, and they went to the finals all 3 years, and they would have won 3 years in a row had he not torn his Achilles. I'm absolutely sure.
Yeah.
Had he been healthy that last year, you know, the whole Toronto championship would have been non-existent.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I think of the three guys, given how he meshed in Golden State, even though it was kind of uneasy at times, you know, he's the one I would have the most confidence in being able to put his ego aside. Like, maybe, especially coming off the Achilles, maybe he takes that Chris Bosh role where he's like, okay, I know, you know, you two are both ball dominant guards and you both work better with the ball in your hands. Like, I can be a catch and shoot guy. That's fine. Like, I'll do all the dirty work on defense. I'll rebound. I'll block shots. That's fine. Like, I don't need 30 shots a game. So,
right.
You know, I could see him being willing to do that, but I'm with you. Kyrie and Harden. It goes back to the fundamental. There's only one ball problem.
Right.
Where these guys are all so good, but they're also all very high usage and operate really well with the ball in their hands. And unfortunately, unless the NBA changes its rules to allow three balls in play at the same time, a Nets big three with those three in particular seems like it could really blow up.
Right. I just want to give you and I credit a little bit. And here's the thing. I don't have anything to prove this, but well over a year ago, after the Rockets traded for Russell Westbrook, you and I recorded a podcast, and after we jumped off the recording and you and I were just chit-chatting as we do, we began to actually discuss, like, the Rockets and go into that whole, you know, this is not going to work. And you were skeptical, I was skeptical, and we sort of agreed, like, if this thing falls apart, this could lead to a James Harden trade. Like, this would be the one thing that they could do to replenish their empty cupboards. And lo and behold, look what's happened. So I just wanted to give us both just a small pat on the back, because we had that one a year ago. Unfortunately, there's no public proof, but we had it, Brian.
Right. Well, what we didn't foresee was James Harden wanting out because Tillman Fertitta is a Trump supporter, according to Rick Bucher.
Yeah, that one I didn't say. That would have been a very, very specific thing to say at that point. Right. I did not anticipate that, but... But it's logical when you really think about it. He is the one play that you have after moving on from Robert Covington that can get you assets. Because, look, Eric Gordon gets you nothing. Like, it's the exact opposite. You would have to relinquish assets to get off his contract. So, like, for Houston, this is all she wrote.
Yeah. So let's go into the Philly aspect in case Brooklyn decides not to trade for Harden or they just can't agree to a price. I mean, I think Philly can outbid Brooklyn with Ben Simmons. If they're willing to include Ben Simmons, that beats anything Brooklyn can offer. If they're not willing to include Embiid or Ben Simmons, they can't outbid anyone, because take on Al Horford or Tobias Harris for James Harden is not an attractive proposal. So if you're Daryl Morey, Mort, would you offer Ben Simmons for James Harden?
Yes. I would.
Yeah. How much more would you offer on top of Simmons?
I would offer what's necessary. And that means probably future picks as well. You know, if that ends up being, you know, two unprotected and two pick swaps or something like that, maybe even more. That's the price. Look, you're talking about James Harden. He's 31 years old. He's in the prime of his career. He's a mid-30s. Look, just listen to that. Mid-30s points per game scorer who is also a primary playmaker. So, like, whatever you lose in Ben Simmons offensively, you gain tenfold with James Harden. Now, defensively is where you lose out, obviously. But you kind of live with that, because the offense is just so overwhelmingly good. Like, if you just swap those two out, you're basically guaranteed 350 more makes from downtown from that position per season, which is an insane number. That sort of spacing, guess who benefits from that? Mr. Joel Embiid, who is now getting told from Daryl Morey, if I see you take one damn pull-up mid-ranger this season, I swear to God. And I say this as a Ben Simmons fan. You know, I actually would hate to see that happen, but like I've said to you repeatedly over the past few months, I think it's time. Now, I would hate, though, absolutely hate for Ben Simmons to end up in Houston. I don't think that's fair to him. I don't think any player should end up under the fangs of Tilman Fertitta. I think that would be just awful. So yeah, but it's a business, and you can't really think about it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been famously reluctant to include Ben in trade talks because he's still so young. He just signed a 5-year max.
Right.
You know, that having that type of team control on him it's a part of his trade value. Harden is one of the few guys I would do it for. Again, just the fit of Harden and Embiid in particular would be pristine. I mean, you said it well, you're losing a lot on defense with Simmons, and like my dream that I half jokingly tweeted yesterday was a trade where it involved Harden and Covington coming to Philly and then Simmons and Al Horford coming out attached with, like, I don't care how many picks it takes to make it happen, because then you're at least, you know, in Covington, you're getting a player who can replace at least some of what Simmons does defensively.
Right.
I mean, you know, this has been harped on by everyone forever. The fit, offensive fit of Simmons and Embiid will never make perfect sense. Not to say they can't win together or that they can't work together, but they're never going to be a perfect fit together. Harden and Embiid offensively would be a perfect fit together.
Yeah.
Also, they would draw at least like 50 free throw attempts per game, so everyone would just detest watching Sixers games, which is an underrated storyline in this possible trade.
No, I know that Sixers Twitter is not just you. Sixers Twitter have been clamoring to get Robert Covington back. And I think that just goes to show, like, the underratedness of Robert Covington. You know, when I bring him up in certain groups and whatnot, maybe, you know, people who aren't necessarily as big NBA geeks as you and I, people are like, it's just Robert Covington. Like, he's just a guy. Like, no. He is way more than that. Like, he is a multiple positional defender. He's a guy who can stretch the court, like, high volume 3-point shooter, can effectively guard 4 positions. He's just like your Swiss Army knife. And you need that type of guy alongside your primary stars. You just do. He's the type of guy who just makes the difference between a champion contender and a championship winner. So, I say that fully realizing he's never won a championship, but
right,
he's that type of guy. So, if you were willing to relinquish, you know, more picks after you conduct the Harden trade, hell, give Portland a call.
Yeah. Well, let's go into the Portland trade since you brought up Covington, because they are sending their 2020 first-round pick, which I believe is number 16 overall, along with a 2021 protected first. I don't think I've seen the details of the protections on this pick.
I don't think so. I have either. It might be out there, but full disclosure, I have not been searching for it.
Okay.
Yeah. Bad research on my part. Apologies.
Yeah. It is, yeah, the 16th pick in this draft, and then another future first round pick, 2021. But right. I'm looking at Woj's Twitter feed, and it does not include details of it. Right. So,
who knows? Before we actually move on to Covington, Carter Elliott has written in comments, he's wild for not taking that $50 million a year from the Rockets. That's an important note. He's talking about James Harden. We didn't even talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Harden declined a two-year, $103 million contract. Which, just because he doesn't want to stay in Houston.
Yeah.
You know, I routinely make jokes on this podcast. Just the $3 million. It doesn't even need to be the one. Like, James, just sign, and then the $3 million, if you don't really... We can take that. It's fine. I'm in $1 million would be fine for me. Just one.
Sure.
But it really proves just how far out the Rockets are at this point. You know, mm-hmm. they might as well have a sign in front of that organization that says, "Don't come here, free agents."
Right. Yeah, I don't blame him for not taking that money.
I don't either.
And I don't think he should be vilified. I think he will be if he forces his way to Brooklyn in particular. I think, you know, the perception will be similar to what it was with KD getting out of Golden State, or out of OKC, which doesn't make any sense because he was a free agent. Maybe it's like Anthony Davis with the Lakers, right. and that too. But Tillman Fertitta has done nothing to help them field a chance. He has actively hurt them every step of the way.
Yeah.
And losing Mike D'Antoni, losing Daryl Morey, I know Steven Silas and Raphael Stone have good reputations, and like hopefully things down the line will be good for Houston. But as long as Fertitta is running that team, or is the owner of that team, I don't know why you would have confidence in their direction. The dude is infamously cheap and was, you know, quote-unquote, like, wow, magically got under the luxury tax line every year in the middle of your prime when you're one of the only teams that was putting up a fight against Golden State. Yeah. I don't blame Harden for being pissed and wanting out, and I wouldn't take that money if I were him.
So Rockets fans are debating whether or not Fertitta is on the level of James Dolan. I think that's fair, but I think the longevity makes Dolan worse.
Yes. Like,
Tillman Fertitta, he's had a great start, like total rookie of the year in terms of bad ownership ever. Like he's right there. He just needs the longevity. He's bound to enter the Hall of Fame of worst owners. It's just give it 20 years, Rockets fans. 20 years of pure misery, and you're right, he might be the worst owner of all time.
Oh, he's not going to last 20 years. He's too broke. He's going to sell that team in the next 5 years.
Oh man, you know who should buy that? By the way, actually, this is way out of left field. So Ryan Reynolds actually bought like a very low tier football team, I think in Wales.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Why not go into the NBA? But he would be the most beloved owner of all time. Like
does he have $2 billion?
He's actually been going into these business ventures recently. Like he owns that gin brand, he owns the Sprint Mobile thing as well. So he apparently invests a lot in like minor companies as well that actually turn a very, very decent profit every single year. So I wouldn't even be shocked if he has somewhere in the neighborhood. I wouldn't be shocked if he at least could gather a group or something. But just the possibility of branding a team like with Deadpool. Could you imagine that your team mascot is Deadpool?
We have gone way off the rails.
No, but
here.
I'm just saying, I would love that. I think there's potential. I'm trying to find something humorous and optimistic for Rockets fans, because right now there's nothing, Brian. There's absolutely nothing to be happy about.
You're that low on Trevor Ariza coming back for Robert
Covington? I very much look forward to those Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza pick and rolls. Yeah, it's going to be great.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so yeah, let's rapid fire through these last few deals. So Covington is going to Portland, yeah, for the 16 for version of a protected 2021 yeah, first. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, two first round picks for Robert Covington sounds like a lot, but I think this is a slam dunk for Portland.
Yeah.
What about you?
Oh, of course. I mean, and again, because it's not a rookie, they're going to get in there. It's a guy that fits the age group of Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. They finally got their wing, that wing they've been wanting for so many years. I mean, we have brought up theoretically, you know, Covington as a candidate, it's the type of guy they needed so many times. Now they actually went out and got him. Like, they did it. They went out and got Robert Covington. This is an outstanding trade for them. Hell, giving up the number 16 in a weak draft. Okay, number 20, the pick in 2021 could come back to backfire because that's supposedly a very strong class. But you know what? It's Robert Covington, man. I'm okay with it. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, especially we got the news from Woj earlier today that Rodney Hood is declining his $6 million player option to become a free agent. He tore his Achilles last year, and Woj says he can play right away with a new team. So, I mean, maybe he comes back to Portland, but it doesn't sound like it's a sure thing. I mean, either way, you know, now, regardless of whether Carmelo comes back, Portland's going into next year with a starting five, potentially at least, of Lillard, McCollum, Covington, Zach Collins, Yusuf Nurkic. Again, is that team winning next year's title? Probably not. But are they right back in the playoff picture? Definitely.
Gary Trent off the bench.
Yeah, and Anthony Simons still as well.
So Anthony Simons is a wild card. Nasir Little could actually, like, he would have a year under his belt or more because of the pandemic. Like, he would be, I have to assume, more NBA ready at this point. Now imagine if you actually hang on to Whiteside, who's willing to take, like, maybe he's willing to take a bench role. Like, if you get a Hassan Whiteside for like $4 million a year, you take that. Then forget about the criticism. That criticism was attached to a guy, you know, earning in the 20s. $20 million a year or more. If you get him for four and he plays 18 minutes a game backing up Nurkic, you can't complain. That's perfect value. That's tremendous.
And Hezonja picked up his player option as well, right?
He did, and I still think there's something there. Not that I thought, you know, that I don't think he could be the guy that I thought he could be like 3 or 4 years ago. But I think there is a guy who just needs some stability with the franchise. You know, a guy who needs to figure out his role, and it might take more than a year. I wouldn't be shocked if he has a good year.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't either. So, Portland, I think, is in that same mix with Phoenix, where I don't think they are a stone-cold lock for the playoffs because they are in the West. If they were in the East, I think they would be. But, like, they're going to have a very good chance of making it, at least.
I would agree.
So, the last big deal on the table, at least as of right now, we'll see what happens. Dennis Schroeder is going to the Los Angeles Lakers for Danny Green and the number 28 pick. What do you think of it for the Lakers?
Huge. We've been talking so much about who's the third guy, and we'd sort of been dreading that the answer would be Kyle Kuzma.
Right.
That answer is no longer Kyle Kuzma. That in and of itself is a win. So here's the thing about Schroeder, right? He's not this traditional point guard. He's not going to go out and give you 7 to 8 assists per game. He's not going to go in and be your primary playmaker. But I think people have, especially people on Twitter, have begun underrating his ability as a passer. Like, he's fine. He won't wow you or put up double-digit numbers in that department, but he's not bad. Like, he can set the table for guys, but his main draw obviously, is the fact that if you give him 30 minutes a game, he can get you 18, 20 points. He can give you long-range shooting, he can give you mid-range shooting, he can get to the cup, he can get to the free-throw line. There are just so many offensive avenues in which you can use him, and that's going to lessen the burden on LeBron. It's going to lessen the burden on Anthony Davis. Like, those two, I wouldn't even be shocked if those two both averaged under 25 points a game next year, which would be totally fine because, hey, there's Dennis Schroeder picking up the slack. I absolutely love this for the Lakers, and I realize that Danny Green, you know, that he offers some defense and some shot making when he's on. I don't care. He's not as good, not even close, and the 28th is just a throw in. Schroeder is worlds ahead. This is a major slam dunk for the Lakers. And I'm frankly surprised that OKC didn't get more. But I think it's because Schroeder is in an expiring contract. Because I'm sure they scoured the market and this was the best offer, but I'm a little surprised that it wasn't more.
Well, I'm thinking, or I'm guessing, they think they could flip Danny Green to a contender and get even more out of him.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the logic, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I don't think they're going to... I mean, they don't have a need for a Danny Green on a rebuilding OKC team. So, yeah, I think if they can find someone... I mean, hell, the Warriors, he fits into that trade exception, right?
He does, yes. But, I mean, even so, like, if you when you make a trade and it's in isolation... Like, you would probably want more. Like, if you make this trade with the mindset that, oh, maybe we can flip Danny Green. Like, no, would you have been surprised if the Lakers had added in, like, a future first with protection, for example? Would you have felt that that had made that trade more unbalanced? Or would you have felt, no, that's reasonable?
No, I mean, yeah, I think, you know, barring what OKC turns Danny Green into, it doesn't feel like they got a ton for Schroeder.
Right, right. So I guess we'll see. I mean, for the OKC Thunder are... I don't think they are lacking in the asset department. So they'll probably be fine. But you always want to win, so to speak, win. You always want to get the most out of a trade. Of course you do. Of course you do.
Yeah, I mean, it might just come down to there aren't, like... He would have been a great fit on the Sixers, but they don't have the type of contract they need for salary matching. Like, it might just be a lot of teams are so top heavy that there weren't many teams with, you know, interested teams with guys on, you know, mid-tens contracts that can easily go in a one-to-one deal for Schroeder. Yep. So I think it wouldn't surprise me if that's part of it. But yeah, I'm with you for the Lakers. Look, I mean, it sounds like they aren't sure that Rajon Rondo is going to return. And, you know, Rondo was not beloved among most Lakers fans throughout the regular season. He did play a big role in their run to the title. But I think it's safe to say Schroeder, at least as a scorer, is a major upgrade over Rajon Rondo.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm with you in thinking, like, all right, now we have the answer in terms of their balance of offense, who's number one, number two, number three, number four, so on.
How pissed is Kyle Kuzma to slide down to like a permanent number four right now?
He won't be pissed if he gets overpaid.
That's true.
But yeah, I mean, it doesn't bode well for his chances of getting overpaid.
I still think he gets moved this year.
Yeah, I can't help but wonder.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens, but... I think it's a great move for the Lakers. I still don't know. I mean, I guess I'm going right back to my Lakers skepticism that I had all of last year that proved wrong. But, you know, given the upgrades that we've seen the Bucks make so far, and who knows what the Clippers do, who knows what the Heat, the Celtics, Nuggets, like, I don't know that move is enough to make them the resounding title favorites going into next season.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. It's only Tuesday.
Yeah.
My only request is that NBA teams, if you're going to make moves, can you do it like 6 p.m. Eastern to like don't drop it on us at midnight and then cost us all a lot of sleep. We know Wednesday is going to be a late night, and Friday probably is too. Like, please God, let me sleep tonight.
Yeah, I would appreciate also not getting trade updates at 6 a.m. That would be nice.
Right. Yeah, so we will be back Thursday morning. Mort and I are both working on Wednesday night during the draft, unfortunately, but we will be back Thursday morning with, you know, big takeaways from the draft. And then Friday, 6 p.m., we will be going live again on Locker Room for the start of free agency. And if the past, 27 hours are any indication, it is going to be an absolutely wild week. So please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And download the Locker Room app if you are on iOS. You can follow us live, ask some questions, as you heard today. Participate in a live podcast, and you can hear the podcast a couple hours before it actually goes live. So Locker Room app, iOS. We'll have at least 2 more live episodes this week.
Yep. Looking forward to it.
So until next time, Mort, try to get some sleep. I'm Brian Toporek. I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen.
Later, Brian. Don't die, man.
Thank you. You too.